But it's good to have everyone here, and I hope that this class is helping you to become more conscious of the responsibility we have in teaching, and to equip us in doing that very kinds of things. And we're almost to the point, and likely it will occur next week when we get down to talking about specific kinds of classes. We'll talk a little bit. We've mentioned them before. May mention them slightly tonight. But how do you teach? How do you teach different kinds of classes and things of that nature? And we'll get in great detail and work on that. And that's when there'll be homework assignments for you. And so just please be aware of that. But tonight we want to head and arrive at the end of this class, talking about tools a teacher might need. I don't know what your church, I don't know what your library looks like. But in view of the fact that so many things are available on the internet, and almost all of those are free, and then there are some books that I think ought to be in the library for every one of us. I don't know what your the monies that are not, you're not buying gas and using for rent and all that other stuff, you know, that expendable income. I'm not sure exactly where that's going, but I believe with all my heart it needs to be going with books, and make sure that you have access to some really, really quality books, and that's the direction we're headed tonight. But tonight we're going to talk about some general principles for preparing for Bible classes. Now obviously that'll talk about some tools, but before we spend time talking about tools that you can use, let's just talk about some of the general principles. In the first place, we cannot overemphasize the importance of prayer. Are you aware of how often, before there was some major event in the life of Jesus, he prayed all night? I don't know how much you've prayed, but I promise you that there will be those times in your life in which you will pray all night. Because of the importance of usually a problem that confronts you. But we need to understand the importance of prayer. We said last week, you have not because you ask not. When was the last time, and I'm not asking for an obvious answer, when was the last time you prayed, God help me be a better teacher? God help me to grow. Help me never to just sort of arrive at a plateau and just stay there. God, help me to grow. And that's important. And we say, ask and it shall be given you, and seek and knock. And we pointed out that the present tense is involved in that. For everyone, and that's us, everyone that keeps on asking shall receive. And prayer is not just something we do, as we said in the auditorium a moment ago. It's not just something we do to make us feel better. But it is the heart and soul of what makes a Bible class, and those of you who may be going to Belgrade or to Clewiston to preach, you've got a perfect opportunity driving over there to pray several times while you're driving over there. God, help me today to change lives. And help something to happen over there in those churches that are weak, that they'll be strengthened. And then for those who teach in here, God, help me to say something to these junior high boys and these senior high boys, or even to young adults. You might be teaching young adults, or to old adults. If we had any aged folks here, we'd put them in that class. But you understand what I'm talking about? God, help me to be able to change life. Use me today. And I would encourage you to recognize, and I'm a whole lot more aware of this now that I'm 70 plus than I was before, this may be the last time I'll ever preach. And this may be the last time you'll ever be able to have an impact on some young person that you're teaching, or, you know, or some older person. And so we cannot overemphasize the importance of it. And as you open up your books and get ready to study, pray. Because prayer makes a difference in God helping you or not. You have not because you ask not. Keep on asking. For everyone who keeps on asking keeps on receiving. And we cannot overemphasize that. And we've spent some time on that. But we'll not spend more time on that than we already have. In the second place, let the Bible explain itself. Now, you're sitting down with your Bible, and this is true every time you sit down with the Bible, but let the Bible be that which explains itself. Here's the tendency that we have. We open up a commentary, or we may open up some workbook that's been given us to teach. And that is not the place it begins. We need to open up the Bible and read what the Bible says. And I don't know how many times you ought to read it, but I'm confident you ought to read it more than once. If there's some paragraph that's sort of at the heart of what you're going to be teaching, you read that paragraph until, well, not that you can quote it, but that you know what it says. And to know what it says, you've got to look at every single word in that passage. In leadership training class, we sometimes get the young men or young ladies to read a verse and shout out, in the first time they read the verse, shout out the first word in that verse. You know, shout out the second word the second time, and the third time the third word. And what that does, it makes you notice. It really makes you notice. I'll tell you something else that's different. Reading it silently and reading it out loud is different. I don't know if you know that or not. But if you'll read it out loud. And then when you've read it, as you've looked at it, you know, let God explain what it means. God used words to explain His message, and that's so important. And so I read a verse. What is this saying? And so let the Bible explain. And so that's where you begin. You don't begin picking up to see what some commentary might say or what some man might say about the verse. You let God speak to you. That's all the early church had. They got a letter from Paul. And it's their Bible class topic to be discussed the next time they meet. They didn't have the whole Bible. They maybe had only the book of Ephesians at the church at Ephesus, at least for a while, and that's all they've got. And so that's where it all starts, and we cannot overemphasize the fact of you read that passage over and over again. Now then, how do you let the Bible text explain itself? Well, you need to keep every word in the context in which it's found. Words have meanings, but words have meanings in the context. And if you'll spend time studying that passage, it will help you know the context. Read that paragraph several times. And then read the chapter before it or the chapter after it. In what setting is this found? And if you know something about whether it's the context of the Old Testament or New Testament, whether it's the writing of David or some other things. There's a context in which every word is stated, and it is the context that enriches the text. And that's really, really important. Well, suppose there are some words in there that I do not know the meaning of, and that is possible, then you might want to start with an English dictionary. Before you ever even start thinking about looking up the word in the Greek, if there's a verse and we don't know what that verse means, or what that word means in that verse, it's the likelihood is that we will not understand that verse. We might have a guess at the meaning of that word, but make sure you understand every word that's in it, and then put that word in the context in which it's found. And by that, we mean read the verses above it, the verses before it, the chapter above it, and the chapter before it. And remember that the Bible was not written divided into chapters and verses. some man came along later, and I'm glad they did. Makes it possible for us to find Isaiah 53, right? He was led as a sheep to the slaughter. How'd you like to be that Ethiopian eunuch with the book of Isaiah on a scroll? Do you know the book of Isaiah on a scroll was 100 feet long? You know, it's 86 feet, I think, from the pulpit area, or maybe from the screen area back to the doors there. Not the front doors, but back to the doors where the camera is found. Now you got to, here's the book of Isaiah, and you couldn't find it. It's somewhere in this, and you got to turn and turn if you've got a scroll. And I thank God for chapter division. But are you aware that there's one chapter in the Bible that ends with a comma? I mean, I don't understand it. I understand it, but I don't understand it. You're reading along, and right in the middle of a sentence, you're in the chapter. And so when you talk about the context, it's the context, and one way is to look, if that verse ends at the end of a chapter, read the next one. So many times the next chapter says, therefore. You're talking about the application of it, the context. What's this book about? To whom was it written? Who's talking? Who said it at that time? That helps us. Now then, we suggest that you consult translations, that you spend times looking at multiple reliable translations, not just translations, but reliable translations. And by that, we mean reliable in the sense that is not written by some denominational group like the Jehovah's Witness who put out their own Bible, or like some individuals who want to teach about the matter of infant sin, the impact of the Calvinist on the NIV. David saying, I was born a sinner. Well, I wouldn't recommend that for anyone. Why? Because that's not a word-for-word translation. And so when we talk about reliable translation, we talk about those whose intent are to put you in the place you ought to stand in reading a foreign language or hearing somebody speak a foreign language. The responsibility of the translator at the United Nations is not to tell you what he thought the man meant to say. That's not his responsibility. His responsibility is to put those individuals who are there sitting in the seat of everybody who understands that language, that whenever he brings it over into another language, there ought not to be any difference. Both of them are sitting at the feet of the words that were spoken by that individual. And that's so important. It's a part of the thing that comes along sometimes in signing for the deaf. I remember years ago when we were learning in this church, learning how to sign for the deaf. If the preacher gives the wrong verse location, the person has got to sign the wrong location, even though she knows better. For what's she going to do when he say, I gave the wrong verse a while ago? Now she's got to go back and say it, and I said it wrong too, you see. And that's the responsibility of the person who is signing. And that's how important it is. And the translations that are of that nature would be like the old King James. This congregation, by and large, uses the New King James. And probably the most accurate word-for-word translation would be the American Standard Version, but it's out of print and only available from one publishing house, and that's from it's owned by a member of the Church of Christ. The American Standard has almost become a Church of Christ translation of the Bible. Wasn't that way when it came out? But it is so accurate as a word for word translation, and coming out of that is the New American Standard, and it is really, really popular. And I love the side notes and the footnotes in the New American Standard. I really, really like the New American Standard. And then one that is more recent, and J.R. Hopkins, I know it's the one that you use. Hardiman Nichols is the one who first mentioned it to me. It's called the English Standard Version. And it is being used more and more and more. And if you want a modern speech translation, the English Standard Version and all of these, and David will show this in a few minutes, all of these are available on the internet. Now, most of you in here are computer literate. If you're not, you can buy the hard copy of it and everything, but they're so readily available. And so David will show you in a minute how to consult these things using the internet. We just point out the NIV, probably the most popular translation today, is not a word-for-word translation. And so that's why you get thought-for-thought translation. Don't tell me, some human, some mortal, what you think Paul meant to say when he said what he said. You tell me what Paul said, and let me deal with the problem of trying to figure out what he said. You know, and that's true in all kinds of language and everything. And keep that in mind. David will talk about this a little bit more in just a minute. And then number five, use the Bible reference works to explore and dissect the passage. There are some Bible reference books. If you don't have a Bible dictionary, you don't have access to one, they're available on the internet. The most renowned is one that has 6,000 pages, and you know you probably don't want to go to the ISBE to look up something. And it's like the kind of dictionary that you might have. You know, the old Webster dictionary used to have in school, you know, it's 4 or 5 inches or maybe 8 inches thick and everything. But the ISBE is of that nature. And there are other translations, other Bible dictionaries. But if there's something you don't understand after you've read the text and looked at it, and you looked at it various translation, you might want to use a Bible dictionary to find that. Use a concordance. And I know this is elementary to all of us, and this is more of a reminder than anything else, to find other times where this word is used. One of the best studies I ever had with an individual was in New Zealand. Didn't baptize a guy, wasn't honest. But he and I agreed that we would just sit, if we're going to both pretend we don't know what baptism is all about, let's get a concordance and let's sit down and read every verse in the Bible on baptism. Then we don't have to argue about it. We'll just read the verse, and whatever you and I agree that verse says, we'll write it down on a piece of paper. And we got about halfway, maybe a little bit over halfway through that study, and he says, "That's it. I don't want to study anymore." Because it was obvious that if you know, when you just look at the text, and that's a great, great way to study. And there's a sense in which this is true. When you've read every time a word is used in the Bible, then you know everything God says about it. Now, there is a topical kind of study that there are other words, synonyms that might be used. But why would you overlook looking at every time that word is found in the Bible? And then, because of the ability of Strong's, who has created numbers to allow us to look at Hebrew words and Greek words, you can find every time that Greek word is used or every time that Hebrew word is used and look at it in the every time it's used in the Bible. And that gives you great, great confidence that I know what God says about this because I've read every time that's found in the Bible. And by the way, the fact a word-for-word translation and this kind of study allows you to do a much deeper insight into that. David will show you in a minute a website that will show you how to navigate and investigate the Greek usage. And then I recommend very strongly Vine's Expository Dictionary. One time I thought if I was going to a desert island and could carry only one book with me, it would be Vine's Expository Dictionary. It puts the reader of the English Bible without any need at all to know Greek and even pronounce Greek words to be able to look up and see the meaning of Greek words. Exceptionally good in showing differences between two different Greek words that are translated by the same English word. If I say agape and phileo, how would I ever get to that level? As simple as having a Vine's Expository Dictionary in relationship to that. And then there's another site that David will show you how to navigate and study words in more depth in just a minute. And then I'd encourage you to have a Bible atlas. If you don't have a good set of maps in the back of your Bible, I would urge you strongly to get a Bible atlas of some kind. There's some on the internet, the LDS site, Latter-day Saints site, has some really good Bible maps and everything. And so if you're looking for it on the internet, but if you're reading and there's a geographical place, you need to know where that geographical place is. In other words, am I going to teach? Here's a passage, and it says, they went down from Jerusalem to Jericho. Wonder how far that is. Wonder what that looks like from, you know, you understand what I mean. And if we say they came out of the land of Egypt, and they went to Rephidim, then went to Mount Sinai and Kadesh Barnea. Where's Kadesh Barnea? You know, and where's Dan, and where's Beersheba, and where's Sodom and Gomorrah, and all the things like that. Those are just names that mean nothing. If you want the Bible to come alive, use those maps in the back of your Bible, but they're not good enough. Get you a Bible atlas. And I was talking to David about this. I said, my favorite one's the one I got in 1957 when I was a student at Freed Hardeman. I said, I think it might be out of print. And so there are some that are far, far better than that. And so let's get involved in this. David, I'll let you come and take over and talk about some other things and talk a little bit about how to use some of these things on the internet.
I won't ask you to raise your hand to this question because I don't want to embarrass anybody. But maybe you can just smile at me, and that'll be your indication. How many of you have? Don't raise your hand, but just smile. How many of you have Bible software on your computer that you have bought some kind of or downloaded some kind of Bible software, have it on your computer, use it on your computer? A few of you, okay? How many of you maybe use a website? And there's all sorts of different ways to study, and there's obviously different websites that are available. If you are able to purchase, or not even purchase, there's some software that's free that you can download. You're able to do so much more in Bible study with that than we could 30 years ago before all of that existed. I still like getting books down and laying the books out and looking at all the books, but sometimes you can do it a lot quicker with the computer. So let me show you just a few things that some of you may be aware of. These are not the best tools, but as far as the internet goes, these are accessible on all your mobile devices, on whether you got a Mac or a PC. I'm not going to talk to you about software because software does not necessarily work with everything. I know that most of you probably know Bible Gateway. It's maybe the most popular, just quick reference, go and snag a Bible verse. Most of the time, if you are reading some Bible article online, and it has any hyperlinks to the, if it has a verse, a citation, a reference in the Bible article, sometimes they'll have a hyperlink that'll just take you right to that verse, so you don't even have to look it up in your Bible. Oftentimes it's coming right off of Bible Gateway. Some churches might have a verse of the day on their website, and all that is just a feed right from Bible Gateway. So it's a very popular website. I don't know how much you've used it. What I do want to show you is that if you wanted to, Dan talked about using multiple translations, comparing multiple translations. Again, there's various softwares that'll do this easily, but if you go to Bible Gateway and go into their passage lookup section and come down, you will see that you can enter in, you may already know this, so sorry if it's old school for some of you, but you can enter in select versions and put in as many as you want. So I just have, this is one of my tabs that opens. Every time I open my internet browser, Bible Gateway opens up, and these four translations are always there for me to go and plug in any verse that I want to. And so if you were doing a study, let's pick a verse. If you were doing a study of the role of women in 1 Timothy chapter 2, and 1 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 12, the Old King James talks about that God says, I do not permit a woman to usurp authority, is the Old King James terminology. What does that mean? Okay, now, we'll go through and dig in and find different sources, but one way, again, to figure out what does something mean is, how do other translations translate that? So you plug in 1 Timothy 2 and verse 12 here, And what Bible Gateway will do for you is drop those four, whatever translations you want, drop them right in columns next to each other. So instead of dropping four Bibles open next to you or going and opening this verse on four different websites, some of you, how many of you were aware that it was maybe this easy to do this? Just to drop it in, good. All right? Some of you are using these tools that are out there. So this, again, select your translations. And so I have this open all day, and you can come back up and you can drop in any verse that you want. But here you can come over and see that even the New King James, where it says, I do not permit a woman to teach, or what does it say? I can't remember the New King James. The New American Standard says, I do not allow a woman to teach or exercise authority over a man, instead of usurp authority. Here's the American Standard. I do not permit a woman to teach, nor to have dominion over a man. I do drop in the NIV as a fourth consideration, just because sometimes it's interesting to see how they translate something. Sometimes they have an interesting, I was going to say spin, it's not intended as a negative, but sometimes it's interesting to see how they put something. Romans chapter 15, Romans 15, Romans 12, verse 5, we are members of one another.
Again, you buy off that hat, you're up.
blessing. You may have more of your study. It is a similar thing, but you have a rule over here that you're not necessarily knowing what's going to be bringing up. You have some rules over that may not be available on your other side. I believe this is available on here. I don't use the number. I differ stuff. Leave your even mind. Here I am playing if you look. Most of you probably familiar with it. There's all sorts of stabilities out the user on the old side. The back of your head, let's just look at those with you just a second. We put a few sites in that are a lot other than this. I still refer you to objective breath. Just says break merchant there on their site or Google, but it very helpful. If you don't create a career, that is one of your favorites. Second one on this on the computer, that should be your favorites. You need to do that site a lot. You need to sign up for their mail. You need to do that site.
There was a rest in Austria.
here. Maybe those going back to 1930s where they could just 50 videos or I don't know, has 40 videos. I'm not good to see. You can go buy a book and never see the videos that are full of teaching type teaching God printed. It's not really that way. It's water that also tops done there. So anyway, those are some websites may be helpful for you. A variety of different ways be helpful to you. Brought books and really have time to really don't time over the mansion and in court and Christmas. You may have people dinner. There are different kinds of people dinner. We think very think Easter. I think over and jump me with this means. Kind of I don't know what the word is. I go and I say half maybe since finish with that. That's it. Yes. But if you want more than that, you've got the width of the Bible people are two that are many side pieces. They're called dictionary, many more definitions. It's to give a paragraph to about a particular word, a particular person, a place. Those are very helpful sources. Now, after do the first time, and then sometimes we'll do the first time we go back to Brother Owens to see what he has to say. This may be what we so has to say. You know, I had a child of time to figure out how to tell the brothers and so forth. Before we ever met first time, after you have been all that you can, then you go and fail, I'm here in my research, and in its context are right books that are basically all books. Just over my in a book. Deep, Joel Deep, Roman, George Hoffman, who's been in for a year, a book, and this based on a light book, all these books by maybe 3 years on book. Here, this is a book. Giving information about all the book. Help put it on to you. Know, here, this message is for this chapter, but I will listen to Corinthians. Why Corinthians in the Bible? Here's the preachers you're going, oh, okay. What's Corinthians about? You put it in a context, not remember, but Henry Hayes wrote as well that it's a good time to get the premium left and ignore the premium Calvinix that he didn't sometimes. But it's holy to see that he had a lot of study for that. But, so what book about? And you need to ask, and there are no good commentaries that are available, and depending on how deep you go. We recommend a lot of people, the one by Ian Zerber, so it all depends on how I, today means in false, this one, it's basically volumes, depends on the picture. I think there are sort of like that, which is hot rubber. And it's available digitally, which is okay then. Go ahead. These